The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
If you're over 30 in a football, that's half your age hitting the digs. Those lads are out partying at St. William Street later that night. I'm going home to have an ice bath.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
There's 46 hours to go until kickoff in the first Lions test with the Springboks, and who better to preview the action this coming Saturday in Cape Town than the four-time Lion, former captain, and indeed our co-commentator alongside Neil Tracy on Saturday here on News Talk and on Off the Ball. Brian O'Driscoll is going to be running the rule over that match day 23 picked by Warren Gatland, or revealed by Warren Gatland yesterday, and indeed what faces him in the manner of the Springboks. Rashida Adeleke, of course, lit up last weekend in Tallinn by claiming two of Ireland's four gold medals at the European Under-20 Athletics Championships. The 18-year-old sprint sensation is going to join us a little bit later on the show as well. Really looking forward to that. And coming up on the Olympic show as well tonight, tomorrow is the opening ceremony and action getting underway from an Irish perspective as well. Jason Quigley will help us preview the Irish boxers' hopes in Tokyo, and Cliona Foley will give us the remarkable story of badminton hero Nat Wen and a few other members and unsung members of the 116 strong Irish team that are in Tokyo preparing for the games at the moment. You can get in contact with us tonight, 53106. We'd love to hear from you via text and via Twitter as well. At Richie McCormack is, I'm not Richie McCormack, I'm getting used to doing the Tom Show. At Off the Ball is where you can get me there. You can send the personal abuse at Richie McCormack, save the people reading the station account, all of that nonsense. Join the studio for the news round by Colin Mulaney. Colin, you're very welcome back to the studio.
Thank you, Richie. Good to
and,
be here.
Join us from O'Callaghan Acres is one and only Will O'Callaghan, who has made the bed in the background as well. So fair play, you've done better than I.
Evening, Richie. Evening, Carl. I think the exact phrase for Warren Gatland, by the way, is he broadly confirmed the team that was leaked to the English media. I think that's the phrase as opposed to naming it, right?
I was wondering about this as well. Do you think that, obviously he named it after the Springbok team was announced, but there was that one alteration to the bench. Do you think he saw the Springbok configuration of their bench and decided to throw in Liam Williams instead of Ian Henderson, given what they could be facing? Or do you just think that there was the one flub that went to the press and they were just trying to test things out?
I think a change on the bench is extremely likely, because yeah, they'll have seen the split on the South African bench before they actually made their official naming, what about less than 24 hours later, which gave them time to make a switch. Like, clearly whoever, like Gatland was, he's wasn't really pointing fingers at players. He thought maybe it could be somebody on the wider staff who may well have had details of the team and then leaked it to friends in the English media a day before the team was due to be named. I think I got the impression, particularly when he said that he's going to change his naming strategy from now on for the rest of the tour, that the team that was leaked was largely accurate, but it didn't have the one change that they made. I don't think it was like, you know, sometimes you hear about things being leaked to the media with one mistake in it to see who would leak it. I don't think it was quite a Colleen Rooney situation. I think they genuinely made a change on the bench and that Ian Henderson was initially going to be there before they saw that South African split.
We've got one of these weekends coming up, Will, and indeed, Col, whereby we're going to need 15 tellies each. Because yeah, we've got the Lions on Saturday. We've got a little thing called the Olympic Games kicking off tomorrow as well. And then you look further into matters GAA. You've got Waterford and Galway and Clare and Cork in the hurling qualifiers on Saturday evening. And then into Sunday, the small matters of the Connacht and Munster football finals. It's going to be a lot to take in. Like, do you manage to... Are you like an Elvis kind of situation, Col? Are you kind of got multiple screens on the go? I know you'd be doing a bit of work yourself. How do you manage to take all of it in?
Yeah, well, the thing about it as well with the Olympics, you got to adjust your time set and your body clock as well, don't you?
It's rough, isn't
it? So how do you take it all in with that?
Just going through some of the boxing times today, like there were 4 o'clock in the morning, we've seen half one for different rowing races as well. Like, it's not stuff that we can, you don't want to say ignore, but it's, you know, our medal hopes are beginning in the dead of night and we kind of have it all upon us to try and get up and catch as much of this as we
possibly
can.
The Olympics is going to separate the real sports fans from the others, I think.
It absolutely is. What are you looking forward to most? Because there was a talk out in the office today of the rock climbing, because that's making its debut as an official Olympic sport, and that is apparently if you're like looking for something to latch hold of across these Olympic Games, dear listener, it is the rock climbing, because it is a mighty crack. Essentially, it is a rounding gladiators made flesh into an Olympic sport. And that's the kind of thing you want, I guess, in Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's everyone's allowed to adopt a sport now for
totally.
The next month and never talk about it or watch it again until 4 years' time. So that's the great thing about the Olympics.
I remember being a really confused 10-year-old watching Barcelona 92 and seeing Bill O'Hurley and Ronan Collins, I think, was doing the presenting on RT back then as well, talking. They'd go through the menu for the day and they talk about, oh, coming up, we've got 9:30 wrestling. And I was like, oh, they have wrestling at this day. This is class. And then you turn on, it's two lads in singlets doing a bit of grappling on a gym mat. And you're like, oh, that's not wrestling. Will, what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I think the rock climbing has to be up there. I remember it was in the Youth Olympics a few years ago, and then I remember seeing YouTube videos back when it got the green light, which feels like about 10 years ago with the cycles, when they make a decision that a sport is going out and a sport is going in. It looks like really good fun. It's effectively a buzzer goes off. The two guys have to try and get through the course as quickly as possible. It's exactly like John Anderson saying, on my second whistle, you go now and try and get to the top of the mountain, effectively. Like, the watching experience has kind of been strange, because I've been prying myself away currently from the Bohemians game, which has about 10 minutes left.
Oh,
it.
Yes.
Bo's leading 1-0 away to Doodlelange. And
different end of the scale.
I've got nostalgic twangs about watching first division football on phones back in the early 2010s, which is exactly what's happening with the Bowls game, because this game wasn't sold officially to a broadcaster. So therefore, if you were looking on Twitter over the last hour and a half, there are some Bohemian staff members and perhaps some Bohemians fans who are living in Luxembourg who have put their phones up and have put it up onto Twitter. The phone sometimes changes orientation and has to be flipped back. And there's something very twee and nostalgic about watching a game. And it feels very old school League of Ireland to do so. But Bo's in a decent position, 1-0 up with 9 minutes to go. So it's not just laptops and TVs that you need to consume sport this weekend. It turns out you need Twitter and your phone as well.
Yeah, my nerves are shredded. 8 minutes to go there is in Luxembourg, and Doodlelange still trailing by a 0-0, Bohemians leading. And of course, back at the Aviva in a week's time in front of 8,000 supporters, those 8,000 tickets went in jig time as well. It just shows the absolute appetite there is, Cathal, for people to go and see anything, because there mightn't necessarily be amongst the, I think it was 2,500 among the general sale went to the general public. There's a lot of people just want to see a game and get to like anything, because they've been starved for so long.
Oh yeah, it's the occasion of it, and just getting out to a match and the feel of going into a stadium, the crowd around you, other people around you watching the game as well. It's just a different feeling. And there was more good news as well tonight. There's going to be an increased attendance at the Gaelic Games qualifiers, the hurling qualifiers on Saturday as well at Semple Stadium and in the Gaelic ground as well. So it does feel like it's creeping back up, doesn't it? Yeah. We're getting back to some sense of normality, and I don't think sport is what it is without the crowd. So thankfully it looks like it's on the way back. But yeah, great to see that interest in the League of Ireland clubs as well. And for Bowls, it's been brilliant, hasn't it?
Yeah, superb. Like, absolutely. Like, I was there last Thursday, and just being, like, it was my first game. It's obviously since the pandemic, I haven't been able to get into anything of the really limited numbers in the meantime. And it was like, I'm not going to lie, it was emotional seeing the team come back out, like, because you're a supporter and you haven't seen them in that long, and suddenly it's this big massive occasion. They're right in front of you again. You see the colour of the jerseys again against the green, and you're kind of taken with it all. And I'm sure people who've been in Croke Park and been in other county grounds around the country as well have probably gotten a little bit similar. And added to it, it was one of my lad's first matches ever as well. The middle lad, Rian, came along for the first time ever, fully enjoyed it. Dara's been a few times before that, but yeah, it's been absolutely fantastic. 5306, if you want to get in contact with us tonight, Colm in Lewisburg asks, Richie, is this your own personal radiothon? I feel like a charity should jump on board. I don't know if Colm, if you've ever seen the movie Airheads, where the trio blockade themselves inside a radio studio. That is essentially what I'm doing for the next 5 hours, and indeed did last night as well. Someone else saying, Fiacre, saying, I watched the rock climbing, you're right. It's basically the Gladiator's Travelator, but stationary, and not nearly as boring as that sounds. I can't wait for that one. Skateboarding as well, says Enda. And Maria says, you'd want to watch those nostalgic twangs, Will. If they persist, consult a medical professional. That is probably something to look out for. This is like taking me back to the days, because we can't see this game. Of when like Irish qualifiers or playoffs would be played in like Turkey, and Turkish TV stations would be asking for insane amounts of money from RTE, and RTE would just say no. So you'd have to know somebody who knew somebody who was screening the game. And I kind of miss those days when everything wasn't necessarily on tap.
That's the exact one I was thinking of. Was, remember we played Turkey in, I'm going to say it was the European Championships playoff, probably for Euro 2000. Mm-hmm. And it was the one where Tony Cascarino maintains that there were bad decisions given against Ireland, but video footage does not seem to exist of the actual game. And I remember like watching Airtel, I think on like whatever, 201, whatever the live scores was at the time, and waiting to see if Ireland had won or lost. Very strange times, but that's the one that really stands out for me, where, again, yeah, rights agreement just couldn't be found. And I don't think I've ever actually seen that game between Ireland and Turkey, except for like photos being used in documentaries.
Yeah, the Cass kind of bloodied, I think it was under his eye, was it? Or maybe his nose. That's the only thing I've really ever seen of it. But like, you miss that little bit of mystery. You miss kind of not being able to see something, or having to find a crafty way around it, as I'm sure one or two people listening in this evening probably managed down through the years. The news round, of course, is brought to you by Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Where are we starting, Cahill?
With soccer, Richie, and Bohemians, as you mentioned, in action in the Europa Conference League second round qualifier with Duda Lange. Just 4.5 minutes now of normal time left to play in Luxembourg. Both still a goal to the good, 1-0. Ross Tierney opening the scoring there after 11 minutes. Meanwhile, the Dublin club have confirmed the return leg of that tie at the Aviva Stadium is now sold out. A quarter of the tickets went on general sale this morning and were gone in 90 minutes. Later this evening, Tallaght plays host to Dundalk's first leg clash with Estonian league leaders Levada Tallinn at 8 o'clock. Tallinn have won 14 of their 17 games this term, but Dundalk progressed when the sides met in the Europa League qualifiers in 2018. Last week, Lilywhites forward David McMillan scored a record 12th European goal, and manager Vinnie Pertz says he's been superb in continental competitions.
What a wonderful achievement. So many great players have played League of Ireland, so many great centre forwards, and we think we have one in our own club in Pat Hooban. And well, you look at Pat Morley, you look at people like Jason Bourne, Glenn Crow, and for David to emulate all them is a marvellous achievement for him, and I'm delighted for him.
Vinnie Pertz there, he's overseen an uptick in Dundalk's form over the course of the last while. I'm not sure if he's learned a thing or two from some of the great managers around the world. One of those we can definitely count, Phil Neville, amongst their midst. He this afternoon is of course in charge of Inter Miami over in MLS, and I don't know, there's lots of different ways of inspiring your players. You can kind of do that thing where you pin a really derisory article up on the dressing room wall. You can put quotes from opposition players to your own players and say, this is what they're saying about you. Or you can take the Phil Neville route.
This football club being in the position that it's in at this moment is unacceptable, and it's not something that we enjoy. And we want to put that right. We have got two games in hand now, so we have to attack. We have to attack that from now to the end of the season. I think we said it last week, 23 games. Is the games we've got left, 23 cup finals, I feel as though that they are. And I sense that the team are ready for the challenge.
23 cup finals, Will.
Yeah, it's the ultimate cliche, 23 cup finals. Has anyone told Phil Neville as well that you can't get relegated from the MLS? So you're probably as well off to tank if you're actually not doing all that well. Like, I wouldn't particularly want to be in charge of Inter Miami currently, when you consider that effectively Beckham used the Beckham rule in terms of bringing in designated players to get a strong squad for this season. And they've got players like Matuidi and Higuain, who I would say have no interest in fighting for whatever conference position Inter Miami can still get into. And they appoint Phil Neville, whose coaching experience extended to working alongside his brother, not particularly successfully, with Valencia, and taking over a remarkably talented bunch of players with the England women's team and doing very little with them. So this is what happens, David Beckham, when you appoint one of your best mates to be manager.
It is a bizarre situation, because I don't think anybody, given the, and he has, like, Phil Neville has played at a level of football that none of us can even aspire to. And he did so for, you know, a couple of decades essentially with two really good clubs. It's not as if he dropped out of Manchester United after a year and a half and fell down to playing for Bury or for Crewe or something like that. He played for Manchester United for a good few years, forged an England career, went to Everton, did pretty well there, and has now moved into management. And I don't think you'll find a single soul outside of his dressing room who can take him seriously. Because, like, you look at the England women's job when he turned up wearing the waistcoat shortly after Gareth Southgate did, it was really reminiscent of, do you remember that scene in The Office where David Brent turns up with the brown leather jacket the day after the other regional manager has worn in the very fancy leather jacket? He's like, see that? Sergio Giorgini. Yeah. That's essentially the life that Phil Neville is leading. And it's a little bit sad.
Yeah, it's not doing a huge amount for his reputation, is it? Like, I don't know. I couldn't understand why they would go in that direction when Beckham was trying to get a management team, because they've splashed a lot of money on players for this season, and these players are coming in for the best part short term, over the age of 30. They're not going to have a great interest in, you know, developing a culture at a new club. And I would imagine the players he's brought in, they're very unlikely to respect Phil Neville as a coach either, like whatever his playing career. And like, Neville was a very useful player for both Manchester United and Everton, and right up into well into his 30s, he was a very good standard player. But yes, like, can you imagine Higuain walking into the dressing room and thinking, yeah, Phil Neville's a guy I want to go out and fight for, particularly if he's coming out with stuff like 23 cup finals and that gets translated into Spanish to Higuain?
23 cup finals, Jeremy, that's insane. Further to action in Europe as well, I know Shamrock Rovers fans are going to have an eye on this one too. Ceuta and Inter Escaldes are playing this evening as well. Albanian and Andorran opposition up against one another. 27 minutes to go in this one, and the Andorran side, Inter Escaldes, leading by 2-0. They just entered injury time as well in Luxembourg, where Bohemians still 1-0 up against Dudelange. Speaking of Gary Neville, or sorry, Phil Neville's one of his former clubs, Cahill, they've been doing more business in the transfer market?
Yeah, some transfer market action today. Everton have signed winger Damari Gray on a 3-year deal. He joins the Premier League club from Bayer Leverkusen for a fee of around £1.6 million. Gray, who lifted the title with Leicester in 2016, has become new manager Rafa Benitez's third signing of the week, following the transfers of Andras Townsend and Asmir Begovic. Elsewhere, Arsenal have announced Emil Smith-Rowe has signed a new long-term contract. The 20-year-old came through the club's academy and became a regular in the first team last season. He had been linked with a potential transfer to Aston Villa this summer, though the exact length of his new deal hasn't been revealed. And Leeds United, they've signed Lewis Bate on a 3-year deal. The midfielder has joined the club from Chelsea for an undisclosed fee. He'll link up initially with the under-23 team for the upcoming season.
Will Smith Rowe seem like a particularly necessary bit of business for Arsenal to get done this summer?
Definitely. They don't seem to like playing with a number 10, which seems to be his best position, but he's looked really promising for them. And if they're going to bring through young players from the club, like we've seen the impact that Saka has already had, it could be a way of Arsenal cheaply regenerating their squad, which they're going to have to do in a while, because, you know, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is, despite his big contract, has gone the wrong side of 30 at this stage. Also, they're going to have to replace Lacazette at some point. It looks like Dani Ceballos is not going to come back from Real Madrid for another season. It's unlikely that Odegaard is going to be there for next year. And particularly without Ceballos and Odegaard, there's a big hole in the team for potentially Smith Rowe to come in and play. I don't know if they're going to be able to convert him into a player under Arteta who plays a little bit further back. I still think in support of attack is his best position. But maybe as he gets older, he'll move 2 or 3 yards further back and play in a deeper position, maybe like an 8. He looks a hell of a talent. Like, he's a great guy to pick out a pass, and they'll be happy to have him tied down, because I'm sure plenty of clubs would have been interested if he'd gone into his final year of his contract next season.
Yeah, and we're going to be looking ahead to the Lions' first test with Brian O'Driscoll a little bit on the show. Lots to say about the lineup and Warren Gatland's decisions on the match day 23, but one of those inclusions, and it's brilliant to see him back because it's such a brilliant arc and a final endpoint to what has been essentially 16 months of hell, or was 16 months of hell, for Jack Conan. He was speaking today out of that test call.
Yeah, he certainly was, and he says he's determined to make the most of his opportunity with the Lions on Saturday. The Leinster back row has been named in Warren Gatland's team for the first test against South Africa, in a game you can hear live here on News Talk on Saturday afternoon. The 28-year-old says he's keen to play a central role.
I've not looked past this weekend. You know, I'm obviously delighted to get the nod for this weekend, and I'm not looking more forward than that. It's all about just putting in the performance now and kind of backing up what I've done the last few weeks and making the most of the opportunity that the coaches have given me, and kind of that's been my mindset since the outset of the tour, to just grab every chance I've been given. And you know, I'm very fortunate that I've been given this massive opportunity again on the weekend.
Yeah, it's a massive opportunity for him. It's one I think he's going to firmly take with both hands, Will. And it's one that should be a great fill-up to rugby supporters of any hue in this country, given the journey that he's been on.
Yeah, it's remarkable, really, because even going into next season after this Lions tour, there's no guarantee that Jack Conan is the starting number 8 for either Ireland or Leinster. Such are the strengths of the back row options currently, particularly at his province. Like, if Caelan Doris comes back, and I'm sure Irish and Leinster fans will be hoping that that's going to be the case after he missed the Six Nations with concussion this season, he will be in big contention to take Jack Conan's place at number 8. But he's a player that seems to really appeal to Warren Gatland. There were a few eyebrows maybe raised when Jack Conan was seen as a bolter when he got into the squad initially, but he's been used quite a lot during the warm-up games. And you got the feeling when that confidence was being put into Jack Conan that he was seriously being considered. A lot of us thought that Toby Faletau would still just come into the team, given that he's been a previous favourite under Warren Gatland. But this just goes to show, if you're Ali Price or if you're Jack Conan and you're playing particularly well, Warren Gatland has been rewarding that form with an opportunity to start. And it's going to be a busy day for Jack Conan trying to deal with that South African back row and also trying to disrupt them a little bit, because against South Africa A last week, lads, the back row for the Lions really struggled, and it contributed a lot to Conor Murray's performance that he had to go in and dig a lot of ball out. They'll be hoping to get a lot more clean possession for Ali Price to be able to play the ball quickly, because when you look at that line out, I think there's no doubt that Gatland and the coaching team are hoping to hit South Africa hard with pace if they can get clean ball during the game.
Yeah, kicking game is pretty much what everybody's been saying. Ron Nagara said it to myself last night. Brian hints upon it as well, that we could well be seeing a kick fest on Saturday. I think, looking at both teams, they're both set out. A draw obviously isn't going to suit anybody, and I don't think that's where we're going to be heading. But do not lose. Do not give anything away, first and foremost, is how both of these teams seem to be set out.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think, look, South Africa's game plan, as we've seen, is so largely built around set piece, maul, making sure that their forward pack are able to get the ball rumbling. That's been the case for the last couple of seasons. And they'll be more than happy, I think, to let Andre Pollard step back into the pocket, kick the ball to get field position, go down the far end and try and bully the Lions. Because it's a big ask for, you know, these four national teams to come together to produce a pack over the last few weeks, and for, in a four-week spell, to go up against the best pack in world rugby and to try and overturn them. I'm sure the Lions would prefer for it to be a game far more out in the open. If this ends up a case of, you know, having to win turnovers on the ground at the breakdown, and if it's South Africa getting a chance of set pieces, I can only see one winner in the Springboks. But I wouldn't be surprised, like the much more informed Bod and Rogers, former tourists with the Lions, I think they're right that there's going to be a hell of a lot of kicking, and Dan Bigger will probably be told at different times to take the letter off the ball and put the Lions into good positions as well.
Yeah, we've also had the women's squad named today as well, Cahill.
Yeah, strong Ireland training squad, 39 strong, which includes four uncapped players, has been announced for their upcoming camps for the 2021-22 season. Ireland Sevens captain Lucy Mulhall joins up with the squad alongside a trio of uncapped players in Catherine Buggy, Mary Healy and Sam Monaghan.
Full time in Luxembourg, Dudelange 0, Bohemians 1. So Bose will take a 1-0 lead back with them to 8,000 fans at the Aviva Stadium next Thursday in the second leg of that Europa Conference League second round qualifier. Fantastic result that, Will.
Yeah, brilliant. I know away goals don't really matter anymore because they've been taken away, but still, to beat a team to nil away from home sets it up beautifully for the Aviva Stadium next week. And if Bowes perform, I know it is a step up in quality playing this Luxembourg champions, really, of, was it 14 the last 16 years? Mm. And given they've played in the Europa League, it is a big step up compared to Sternan. But if Bohemians were to play like they played against Sternan, as you were watching at the Aviva last week, you fancy the Gypsies to go through, like £500,000 in prize money to get through to round three. That steps up even more if you can get to the playoff round, and you could potentially draw a few big European teams in that round too. Ooh, it's a massive opportunity for Bowes from here.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Don't forget, an 8 o'clock kickoff for Dundalk tonight at home, in nominal sense, at Tata Stadium to Lavadia Talent. The Dundalk team is in. Alessio Abebe starts in goal. Jurkovskis, Andy Boyle, Sonny Nadastad and Dara Leahy are there back four. Then across the midfield, we've got Will Patching, Wilfred Zahibo and Samuel Stanton. Then Dan Kelly and the outgoing Patrick McElhenney are in support of Dave McMillan. An 8 o'clock kickoff for that one. We'll try and keep you updated as best we can before that one. And before we go, I want to bring us news of the boxing draw as well today, Cahill, if we can.
Yeah, four Irish boxers will begin their bid for an Olympic medal from the last 16 stage after the draws were made earlier. Kelly Harrington and Michaela Walsh were already poised to receive buys into the last 16 prior to the draw. Aidan Walsh received a buy into the last 16 of the men's welterweight, while Aoife O'Rourke will also begin in the last 16 in the women's middleweight. Kurt Walker is the first Irish fighter into action early on Saturday morning. Emmett Brennan is in the ring on Sunday, with Brendan Irvine beginning his Olympic campaign early on Monday morning.
Yeah, and Jason Quigley is going to help us preview our Olympic boxing hopes on the Olympic show later on in the show. Cleena Foley as well, looking at Nat Wynn and a couple of more, our more potential surprise packages in this 116 strong Irish Olympic team for Tokyo 2020. But for now, Cahill Mullaney, thank you so much for the news round as well.
Thanks, Richie.
And for Will O'Callaghan as well, we'll let you go back to watching strange videos on Twitter to your beat the band and to your heart's content tonight.
I'm going to watch the Leinster under 20 football final. Offaly are trying to win their first Leinster final in 15 attempts since 2005. I don't think they're going to do so against Dublin, but that gets under underway in about 3 minutes' time. So
Will,
that's
you don't have to lie to me.
Viewing,
you don't have to lie to me, Will. We're all amigos here. A couple of texts in saying a few pubs show that Turkey match back in 99. I think you're right. Under the radar, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Arthur Daly kind of situations. And a text from John saying Phil Neville, poor Doat, seems to be caught in a loop of looking for developmental management roles that'll in theory prepare him for that big gig. What is that big gig? Your big gig, €30,000 could be yours. We'll tell you how after the break.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.